reconvened as a work session.
Thank you, sir. Please ignore the chewing.
This is why we initiated the no chip rule. Only item we had for discussion tonight was discussion of the Orange Avenue overlay, which we kept very simple and had no real item for that. But we've provided you with an opportunity to hear from staff, kind of get our rundown of the last 2.5 years or so that we've been working on this little project, and it's many, many drafts and many formats. And so you have the latest and greatest that has even had city attorney review. The only thing we are still working on is the very last portion of what was the development enhancement menu, which was the intent was to basically trade the ability to add additional floor area ratio for some of the key properties where we needed parking and we needed some activation from those properties that had been vacant for a while on the bookends, as well as on Progress Point, which is taking its own path now. And if you haven't seen any of that, it's very interesting. And we've got some really cool concepts out there for how that can help to activate the corridor, because for quite a while we weren't exactly setting the bar very high for activating the corridor when we had our Progress Point building. Our fire department enjoyed using it for training, but I think you can only break so many walls down before the structural integrity gets a little tough there. But now the commission is looking at the potential development of Progress Point, how that will look as a public-private partnership potentially. And it's a process. If you're interested, we're having some great discussions. Tomorrow, I think we have a work session to discuss some of that. The development enhancement menu, as some of the floor area ratios for some of the larger properties have kind of been shrunk down a little bit. There wasn't the ability to use the original menu that we had. And also we changed the A properties, which are kind of the...
There's just a celebrity.
So we have a blank slate to work from tonight. Out on here. Okay. That's all right. Let's work on the blank slate.
There it goes.
Okay. All right, let's just bragging on our new technology. But the A properties are kind of the, I'll say, the bread and butter of Orange Avenue itself. It's the smaller properties. If you look at the geometry of those properties, a lot of them are long properties that were built pre-current codes, building codes, all those sort of things. And we have some things within our codes that have made redevelopment of those properties very tough. We have a rule that if you go over 50% of the building valuation, which is not the actual value, it's an equation we have based off the appraiser's value. And then anybody who's ever remodeled something old knows you go in with a budget and it looks like it's going to work out, and then you open the walls and you find out that that budget's going to grow. And so a lot of those properties, if you go with that 50% valuation, would have to be brought up to all current codes, including setbacks, parking, that sort of thing. And that there's no physical way for that to happen. And so there's a number of factors that have led to the area being economically stagnant for a number of years. The kind of northeast part of the overlay where you have the designers row area has had new investment and doesn't have as many vacant parcels and has had a lot of good reinvestment. But a lot of the smaller properties just have no physical way of bringing their buildings up to code, so they can't remodel or add square footage. And so we wanted to have the opportunity for those folks to use regional parking that would be provided on the areas D, C, and J that basically were vacant properties, so that they could build a little larger, but they had to provide additional parking that then had to be leased to the small businesses in the area so that they had the opportunity to grow. Plus, the area is currently underparked significantly. We've done a number of studies that are, we've done everything from just a general square footage broad number to recently we went business by business, parcel by parcel, looked at the business certificate for every single business. And to give you an example of that, if you have a law firm, every single different practicing attorney or doctor will have their own MISDIS certificate. So when I say we, I mean, Allison did a great job of going through every single business certificate to find out the building size and the parking requirements for that particular type of business. And again, found out through a very in-depth study that we are in the hundreds of parking spaces short in the area. And the thought was that just like Park Avenue, we've got higher floor area ratios and we've got beautiful buildings at a traditional scale, but what you don't see is a number of parking garages that make the area possible. Same thing at Hannibal Square. You have this beautiful place where you can park on the curb and find existing parking, but there's a six-level parking structure hidden back behind on the south side of
New England.
New England. Yeah, that serves the folks who work in the area, and there's some living units. So the thought was the same of going vertical with the parking and to get more open space, because right now we don't have any requirement in our code for open space. Some would say, well, we only allow 85% impervious. So that means we get some parking lot islands, maybe a little green retention pond, but nothing what we would call meaningful open space, that is a place where you can, grab something to eat, sit, have a great place. And now that Progress Point has been determined to, that's kind of been the cornerstone, and Progress Point is Area C. We know that there will be at least an acre and a half of park there right off of the point itself. Also, that's an entrance to Mead Garden, which is just down Denning Drive. And, there's going to be realignment of Palmetto itself, which will create the opportunity for more trees, will create more of a curvilinear road that's going to serve as a parallel access to Orange Avenue. You can see that, maybe I'll laser pointer here. You can see that the laser pointer doesn't work on the screen, so let's go to this one. You can see that Palmetto comes down here and then hits Harmon, which is one of the six legs of the Harmon 1792 and Orange intersection, which is a very, very major intersection. The concept we have is to eliminate Harmon, which actually goes right down the middle of some commonly owned property, and extend, basically trade the right of way here for the extension of Palmetto, which will come out and to a right in, right out only onto 1792. So there is the potential to eliminate a portion of that intersection, which should help. And
how does that alignment and the getting it across the D parcel, is that something that has to be worked out with the
yes.
owner of that property?
Correct. Yes.
So
but
part
it's
of a future development.
It's if you own that property, having a major right of way that is a one-way street right down the middle is not the best design. And so
they're willing to trade off.
Well, the we've talked since very early on about putting this down here because basically that is the cheapest real estate on the site where I'd say this that goes right down the heart of the site there is probably some of the best real estate on the site. So this is one of the many, many topics that staff and the commission has been working on in work sessions, you know, for gosh, longer than more than I can count, but we've tackled some pretty major subjects and where the overlay started and where it is now is kind of taken some of the areas that were a little outside of where people thought that the overlay needed to be was some of those properties were removed. And you know, one of the things that an overlay does is offer protection. It'll have the first architectural standards that we've worked on for quite a while. Architectural review, which is something that will be very unique to Orange Avenue. And the very cool thing about Orange Avenue is it's not trying to look like a certain style. It's got its own unique style. It's got architecture of all different types. You've got a ball field that's got the standard kind of Rollins design from some Art Deco things and some buildings that are just kind of plain old block buildings because this area used to be the This used to be the industrial area where you brought your lumber and your oranges down and threw them on the train and they would head down to Orlando. So
yeah, I used to get lumber from Thomas Lumber Craft.
There, I didn't know that used to be there. Although, yeah, I don't think I can afford lumber right now. So so yeah, let's open it up for discussion from you. Go ahead, Jim.
I'm not clear what the purpose of planning and zoning is with regard to the Orange Avenue overlay. Are we supposed to bless it, amend it, or kill it?
Well,
any of the above.
All three of those things are options. You are the local planning agency. And because this area is a larger area in acreage, it is it's a major amendment, more of a major amendment to the comprehensive plan. And so as the local planning agency, your input is very important to what we send to the state of Florida for their review. So
we would be remiss if we didn't oversee it.
Absolutely. Any land use decision should go through the planning and zoning board. Like you all get to concentrate on just the planning and zoning portion, the nuts and bolts, the kind of the details of planning where, and give your best advice to your city commission for them to make an educated decision because they've got kind of things coming from every direction and a whole city's worth of things coming at them. And so planning, zoning, I always say your job is to do the heavy lifting and do the give the best recommendation you can to the city commission. So you, as was stated, you can do any of those that you feel are appropriate.
Well, let's go back a ways. How did the Orange Avenue overlay get created?
Well,
was it generated by staff or an individual? Or
it was written into the comp plan that the city would look at corridor gateway plans, consider overlays, and it was determined before getting here that Orange Avenue was kind of the lowest hanging fruit because Fairbanks was developed out, Lee is developed out, but there's a lot of opportunity here. I know that when I was watched the meeting where when I was hired and the city commission had to confirm my hiring, what I remember exactly from the video was how quickly can you get here and start on the Orange Avenue overlay. So it's kind of determined before my time. This is an area that's been studied, gosh, 20 years before I got here. We've got studies galore of kind of saying, why has this area been a little economically stagnant? What do people want to see? We've got designs and concepts, and people have been talking and talking and talking for years. And I think they brought me here to try to create some action. And
well, if I remember the history, and I could be wrong, so feel free to correct me, but the two large property owners, Dimitri and Holler, were granted 200% FAR and 6 and 7 story properties in the original presentation of the OAO. Is that correct?
Partially.
What do you mean, partially?
There was the opportunity to gain, we had a maximum achievable floor area ratio for each property. Area J, which is known as the Holler properties, it's the easiest one to use because it's just a big rectangle. The use that was on that property was disallowed a number of years ago, and so they had a parcel there. RVs, actually, yeah, they were, it was an opportunity to redevelop those properties. We went through had an Orange Avenue steering committee where each commissioner appointed somebody, and then we had a representative from kind of 6 of the major boards and committees who were the folks who went through the initial process, and we met with property owners and major stakeholders, including the city. And then they provided a recommendation and a study that then was taken to the public for public input, had a lot of public meetings and meetings with the Planning and Zoning Board, City Commission, public discussions, presentations, that sort of thing. And then the Planning and Zoning Board voted to recommend approval. It went to the City Commission. And then the way that this process works when you send something to the state after the first reading of the ordinance, and the state doesn't care about that big document there. They care about the comp plan because the comprehensive plan tells how much density, how much impact on the area could be created by that. So they don't even look at the zoning code portion, which is all the details. So after the first reading, it gets sent to the state. The state and the Department of Economic Opportunity, the community planning portion of that, I guess. Just I can't remember the there.
DEO.
Yeah, I can't remember the.
Is the state concerned with traffic impact?
We also sent it to, as a part of the process, we send it to a number of state entities. We send it to Department of Environmental Protection. We send it to FDOT. What FDOT is, they take what's existing. They take what could be built additionally. They plug the number of additional vehicle trips per day into their regional model. And they look to see if there's an impact on any state road within, I believe it's a 5-mile radius that would be caused by this. It's also sent to St. John's. It's sent to the State Department, Department of Education. The unique thing about most of this area is it's already entitled at any office or commercial property in Winter Park. Has the entitlement of 17 units per acre. So this was larger at the time, but there were close to 1,100 units that were entitled as it stood. Could all of those be built? No, because a lot of them were smaller parcels. But we knew that some of the two larger parcels, in order to build something of size that can pay for parking and pay for extra parking, really the only two major type of uses that are kind of a sure bet on being able to build parking are hotels and multifamily. And so there was a first version that was the first reading got sent to the state and came back with no comments. And then we had a second reading and some changes were made at that second reading that increased the floor area ratio of up to 200% on both of those properties. I believe the Holler property could go up to 5 stories, but had certain setback requirements, and I may be a little bit off. It's been a little while. And then what's called the Dimitri properties, which is made up of some of the A properties and some of the D properties down there, had the ability to go higher, but required a greater setback because the thought was they had a parcel that could push more of the development to the back. We had other tall buildings at that corner, and it was thought to be an appropriate place for a little more height. And then that was rescinded prior to going into effect, and we jumped right into working on it. And we've continued to work on it through work sessions and discussions with a number of different experts, a number of different studies and that sort of thing. And now we are too close to the finish line of not an amended because we never had an officially approved overlay, but an Orange Avenue overlay that's had a lot of hours of work from staff and the commission and I think everyone's had a little bit of input.
So Jay is 4 stories now?
Yes.
Or Jay is 4?
3 to 4.
3 to 4. I think it has a
larger setback. And D is 5.
Yes, and it's got some flexibility depending on if, because we have something we designed into this with the architectural standards was the ability to have a higher first floor up to 20 feet, which would allow for a mezzanine. And then 13 feet for any floor above, which is, not uncommon for an office building, apartments or something like that.
Height limit, 5 stories of 56 feet.
Yes, and it's basically if you can fit, I think it reads if you can squeeze another story into it, but you're at that height limit. Yeah.
So if someone assembled a bunch of A properties, they would have less entitlements even if they had more land than D or J.
The thought behind that was didn't want anybody to keep adding more and more small properties and growing and growing and growing until they owned assembled every small property that would keep adding to their to their entitlements, and that each of the A properties, which were the ones, the small businesses that needed the help, that needed the parking, is you know, can't be overstated, is one of the main things that was troublesome. We've also got a very dangerous road
in that area. I haven't really noticed a significant turnover in businesses, which I understand that there is a code minimum parking issue, but I'm just curious. I have noticed that businesses have actually been doing decently well there. And I know they may not have minimum code parking, but I'm just curious.
There's been a certain type of business that's been able to be more successful, and that's those that aren't parking hogs, if you will. Sure. We've got some that are grandfathered in that aren't changing a thing because they're grandfathered in. I mean, not to point fingers, but we have the winter park.
Did that building have to get a variance for their parking lot?
No, they didn't.
They met code.
They made it work.
Yeah, but the winter park. Just
off-site parking.
Yeah.
The winter park playhouse that holds 125 seats, I believe.
Okay.
Does not have a single parking space.
Yeah.
Another one.
So, okay, actually, that
that's
whole.
That's a B, right?
No, it's just to the east of the F property, that kind of triangle there. For all those parcels, there are three parking spots total. That includes the playhouse and everything else. So, you know, on the north side of, you know, kind of north of Minnesota, the thought was that the J property would have to absorb and provide the parking that would serve that area. You've got some great businesses in Designer Row that have done a fantastic job and have beautiful things and don't need to change a thing. But the properties that have redeveloped, so there's the lumber yard and then there's the building to the south.
Mm-hmm.
They are, if I'll point them out here. These two properties right here are large enough that they could have a parking lot. They could provide the retention,
and
they actually leased parking from FDOT, from the railroad, to be able to meet the parking requirements. So they were able to remodel the lumber yard into what it is now and the businesses. And the same thing with the State Auto Building. Where, I mean, beautiful adaptive reuse of a building. I mean, award-winning from a historic preservation standpoint. They were able to build that with, because they can have, they were able to meet retention requirements, underground exfiltration. And, but if you look at the parcel itself, quite a bit larger than the other ones, and it's got the size and the depth to be able to provide the biggest things that are troublesome for the area.
I guess I just have a challenge picking winners and losers. If someone did want to assemble, it's my opinion that they should have the same rights as D or J. That's my opinion. We can do with it what we will, but someone who assembled 10 years down the road as much property as Holler and comes in and says, well, we have actually an overlay where the specific property owner has two extra stories, more FAR, sorry. And I just, you know, I think it's highly unlikely that people would assemble a lot, but I don't know. I don't know if it's actually a concern of whether someone would be able to achieve what you're talking about of assembling enough to have that big of an impact.
Yeah, we looked at that. It really started with looking at, okay, we have three large vacant parcels. We have hundreds. We are hundreds of spaces below meeting code minimum, which you don't have to have the exact number. And we should be very smart with the way we have parking. If you've got an office that needs it 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then you know you've got somebody else on the property who is a restaurant who has a bigger need evenings and weekends, there should be. We don't need to build a lot of empty parking garages like we've done in other places, but if we use we adopted the ULI standards for parking, and we also looked at the walk circles. We have a 750-foot mm-hmm. walk circle that is a comfortable walk for most people. And if you look at where C sits and area D and area J, those walk circles just happen to cover almost the entire area and kind of be perfectly spaced out. We also have area I, which is a unique property at Bank of the Ozarks. We've talked with them. They've owned the property for a number of years and we've tried to gauge their interest on what sort of development, you know, they would like to have a building in the area. It's been vacant for years and years and years. It's become like another progress point where it's just an empty parking lot where people park there every day because nobody's telling them that they can't. And then there's a lot of been discussion of traffic and mobility. You know, one of the biggest things we wanted to get out of this, well, you know, we really wanted to leverage private investment into public good. One of the things that we really wanted was the extension of the Denning multi-use trail down all the way south. South here on Denning and actually go to the very southern extents of Denning and then go through, have it separately fenced off from Mead Gardens, because if you've ever, a lot of the bike races and other 5Ks and that sort of thing start and go through Mead, and because there's a connection very closer to the Orlando urban trail system, you know, bike trail system. And if you ride bikes around here, you know, we're not very connected to anything. And we have a great multi-use trail in Denning, but it's just one little section. And so we wanted to have that connection to our southern neighbors in Orlando. And actually we've worked on a plan that will bring us all the way up. We have phase two of Denning to the north that gets us up to the Lee and Solana area. And we've worked to create a bike ped connection over into safe bike ped connection over into Maitland, which will connect to their trail system and up into Seminole County. So that was a big part of this was connectivity. And we have also done a greenways plan on how we can hopefully get more people safely using bikes and walking and have more. And also Orange Avenue itself is, if you designed a road, it would be the example of what not to do. It has substandard lane width. There's four lanes, two in each direction.
Very narrow.
And then you combine that with parallel parking on both sides of the street that have substandard widths. So if you are in the auto side mirror business in Winter Park, you are probably doing pretty well, because per linear foot, it has more accidents by far than any other road in town. A lot of them are side swipes, but there are some very dangerous blind spots. An example I'll use, if you're coming out of Real Fish and you're trying to take a left, you've got trees and you've got parked cars in your way, and you have two lanes of traffic coming at you that you can't see, and people travel at a very high rate of speed on Orange Avenue, and you have to have your nose out there before you can see anything. And we have a lot of pretty bad accidents, and then bike ped accidents are pretty prevalent in the area and typically result in injury. And and we've got the opportunity, and that's kind of a separate conversation on the infrastructure portion of Orange Avenue. Even if nothing happened today, we should be looking at what is happening on Orange Avenue. I know Mr. Spencer can tell you on his side of Orange Avenue, on the west side of 1792, it's a DOT road. We met with the group who has got the design contracts on on, it's a two-part project. They are doing a road diet from Clay all the way to 1792, taking that down to three lanes and having some crossings, some upgrading some bike facilities, and then coming into a really unique roundabout at Clay in Orange Avenue. That it's got some,
that's phase two.
Yeah, it's, and the one's funded, one's not, and I really doubt they're going to do one without the other. But when we talked about our desire to look at a diet, a road diet on our side and a roundabout as well, done a, you know, every study available out that'll show that we carry the same volume of traffic and safer, and the accidents, you know, if we design it correctly, we can greatly reduce those accidents and still carry a good number of cars. And it's a cut through to get, you know, for people who are just trying to get to Fairbanks from 1792. And, you know, that's, again, that's a separate, technically a separate project, but it's hard not to have that conversation when you're talking about, you know, the Orange Avenue overlay itself.
So. I have a question for you.
Sure.
Since you brought up that the last workshop that you have fixed some of these and haven't gone well, what are some pitfalls? Like, what do we need to be thinking about as we start looking at this?
I think one of the things I've seen on multiple is a lot of sub area type things where you start breaking it up in a bunch of pieces, and you start treating it like everybody's got their own plans. When I think if you're increasing design criteria, we should try to be fair across the board. There's usually a lot of unintended consequences of the little guys that I know we're trying to protect, but you'll find little things. Like I found something that there's a 32 foot wide building minimum to cover the front, which intent wise, design wise, I think is great. But if you got a constrained lot and you got to do your own access in and out, you'll hit that little pitfall. Seen stuff like that go on. I've seen issues where you kind of have a plan for the future of what's going to happen with when somebody comes in that wants to do all the right things and they're in the wrong sub area and you're amending a whole overlay, and then you notify everybody within 500 feet of the overlay, or actually you meet your minimum to notify the whole city. So some guy doing
likely
the right
citywide
thing, it's a citywide notification and he's doing something great. We all love it, we recommend it. 500 people come out and you get buried. So those are some of the things that I've come across. And I think over promising. I think people think infrastructure is coming because there's so much infrastructure that's needed in every city. They get this overlay, they get excited. We show a lot of pretty pictures, talk about Orange Avenue, talk about bike trails. And then when you get to the end of it and it's adopted, you pretty much just have changed entitlements and, you know, the infrastructure gets forgotten. That's a big picture item.
Got the bike trail covered.
I would look after those. Yeah, I would look after that, those sub area A folks, and make sure that when you're looking through that, single four corner buildings, one story guys are protected, because they're never going to read this. Buttermilk Bakery's not going to sit down and go through a 50 page code. They may never understand it. Not because they can't, because they probably just don't want to. And that's the main thing I've come across. And if you don't get it right the first go, these things can get, as you already know, it's not even adopted and you're already chopping it up.
Oh yeah,
we've cutting it up and then get complicated fast.
I would say we have, this has become less of an overlay, which is typically a, here's your box that you get to create within and general rules. And we've written a bit of a prescription that I think has been pared down so much, it's going to be very hard for a lot of the properties we need to develop so they can do the things that we need them to do and provide the things for the small businesses. We actually have made things easier on the A properties, and they're allowed to increase their FAR without having to earn it. Yeah, because early on we try to have some smaller things in there that would allow them to earn that extra 15%. That's good. We're just saying you can go up to 60 by just because, and also you are exempt from the 50% valuation rule, except for life safety. Sure. You know, there are certain things the fire marshal just won't let us avoid, but
well, you require a development agreement for the increased
for the larger properties.
So that's part of it.
Definitely.
So it's, essentially it's running like a PD.
Definitely.
You pretty much have to get a DA.
I wish we had a planned development ordinance, because I think you've made the point of, you know, if you had those as separate as those planned developments, I love PDs and I love overlays, and they can work very well in concert, but we don't have one. So
we have a couple areas designated.
Yeah,
we've got written out at some point. They're out Fairbanks.
We've still got a PURD, I think it is, that
that's residential
that you'll be seeing, but that's only okay. For residential. And that's we don't have see a lot of them, because there's very small window you've got to fit into in order to do that. But
have the property owners at D and J given any input? I mean, I know they're not happy about it, but have they given any input that they can make something work at these FARs and these floor area ratios and stories and density?
Doesn't their lawsuit against the city override that?
I'm gonna let the city attorney comment on that.
That's how unhappy they are.
I'm not privy to all the conversations that happen, but to my knowledge, I don't think we know the property owners of those two sub areas think of this recent version of the overlay. And with respect to the lawsuits, they don't govern the legislative changes of the comprehensive plan. It's a narrow focus case on the past and whether or not, in their opinion, the prior version of the overlay was rescinded in the proper method. That's really what that lawsuit's about. And it doesn't impact the city's ability to adopt or amend its comprehensive plan. So this is this is part of the legislative process, and you're part of that. And so
I was just curious if the people that could potentially develop these properties, I mean, they're going to give it to them, they'll figure it out.
I've reached out to the property owners. And the thing is, we've analyzed the properties for them to a very high degree. I think we've gotten into what we call analysis paralysis, where we've analyzed it from every angle possible, that if they do decide to do anything, we've done a lot of the work for them already.
To do some of the things that we want to do. I heard the number $16 million thrown out there that would be infrastructure.
Yeah, that number is absolutely incorrect, and I have no idea to redo Orange Avenue
of some sort to some of the other to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's still proportionate share or something or another in here.
We're actually the proportionate share is impact citywide is what we're looking at. It would be,
will that be in place by the time we would do something with this, or by the time that somebody would come, because they still have to come for conditional use, right?
We've got a process we've got to go through for our transportation impact fee that we're well into. So
so if we didn't do this at all, we still own C.
Mm-hmm.
And we could help the parking situation
for
A's with C.
If we provided a parking structure.
On the ends who would like to do something could still come for a conditional use hearing based on their cobbled together properties under current code.
Yeah, they would be. The conditional use is not going to allow them to, if we're saying no overlay. Their maximum achievable floor area ratio is going to be 0.60, where the D properties down there, it's a combination of office, industrial, and commercial.
So all significantly smaller.
So 26,000 square foot an acre max.
So what's going to happen if we have that is story. We are going to have shopping center, parking dominated development, because those are required. Those properties are required to designate 25% of their land as open space, with the thought being, instead of looking at cars, we look at open space and there they can go vertical with parking. But we are very unique that we count parking garages towards floor area ratio. Right now, the discussion is, I think we're at a maximum of 100% for the two properties, in my opinion. That will not work. You cannot economically make a feasible project, and it's going to be more feasible for them just to build under C3 zoning and build a standard, because, you know, it's not that they get 100% far, it's that they can maybe get 60%, and then 40% is going to go towards a parking structure, because we're also requiring them to overbuild their parking by 10% plus additional, but we're also making them monetize that additional by making them lease it to the smaller businesses.
Because we're still counting. We're still counting the garage and the FAR.
150% is where I believe those projects could work. It's some of the earlier
percent, including the garage.
Including the garage. It would still be very tight.
And that's for an apartment type use here, assuming, I mean, because that's probably, they're probably trying to get to multifamily.
Multifamily is going to be, which we've heard from everyone who's come in, and then you probably know this, or a hotel. At that time, we were looking at the ability to transfer the density from other properties that are not using them, and then would not ever be able to use them again. So they had the units available. The commission made the decision to take that out. So there's about a magic number of 200 to 250. Sometimes you can go a little lower of number of units you have in order to have a feasible product.
Is the link to the presentation that the gentleman did with the modeling at the various?
Yeah. Oh, all that's on the page. Yeah.
If y'all didn't see it. It's actually really well done.
It's done.
I thought 125 was kind of a sweet spot. 100 seems like you can't quite get there. That's just me from the take of seeing that. I know that's not what the projects will be, but sorry.
But, you know, and it's the decision of yourselves and the commissioners. Staff is going to give you our best opinion based on our knowledge and the research that we've done, the professionals we've worked with of what could potentially work economically. It's going to be tough at those counting floor area ratio, but doesn't mean it can't be done. And if this gets far enough down the road where we have people who say, I've come in and tried this in every way possible and can't make the numbers work, yourselves and the commission has the ability to look at modifying that, or they may have to modify what they thought originally they were going to build on the property and build something that is still going to be new and
substantial. Like 200%, so they're not building what they had anticipated from that version, most likely.
Yeah,
and that's not, to your point, really our goal here. Our goal here is to try, if we're gonna try to do something, our goal is to try to give something that is economically feasible and attractive to whoever is doing it.
So they have to have
all of it.
They have to have an incentive.
Yeah, they've got to have enough building size or building type to build the parking that we can't provide all of it on Progress Point. But we would be building
rent, right?
Yeah, but you have to.
What's the highest FAR in your park right now?
200%.
200, and that's in downtown.
That's every CBD area, if you will, Hannibal Square and
Park Ave.
And Park Ave and
which was more of an annexation.
Rabidage is actually 100%, but it's really cumulative.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was thrown out at the, yeah, I think Carolyn brought it up, like the medical arts and Rabidage, mm-hmm. a couple of those are like around 100.
You've got to consider the fact that land was free for the medical arts center. And
I'm just saying, like,
yeah, the use always has to be considered.
It's a reasonable argument to hit 100 or 125%.
Yeah,
200 for this area seems massive.
The parcels
many acres are, all at once,
yeah,
almost more than doubling it. Yeah, I think it's going to be
on those larger parcels. 200 was going to be excessive. And this is, again,
given what that area looks like.
I've,
yeah, and it's not been, the CBD. I would agree. It's not really a CBD type setting. You know, I mean, it's got connectivity issues.
Yeah, we do want to make it more walkable, but with some of the larger parcel size and the, with the, you know, there's not a 5-acre parcel on Park Avenue that's just would dominate everything with the 200% FAR. But some of the smaller buildings here, maybe, but it's not really the village scale that is trying to be kind of preserved here.
I guess it was a PowerPoint that guy did, right? So the slides are still
mm-hmm. in yeah, the whole thing is online.
It's been a while since I've looked
at it. Yeah, I was.
We've done three separate massing studies, and the problem with massing studies is you can
assume ties build out too.
You can make them look like pink Pepto-Bismol blocks that people are going to say, "Oh my God, that's."
You have to look past the representations, but it gives you some massing ideas.
And when you put architecture on there, people go, "Ah, oh, it's hideous," and you're going, "No, it's not what it's going to look like. It's just the building."
House is staged or not?
That's a very good point. But the
see what it looks like without any furniture.
The last set of the last study we did, which we'll still have a little bit more coming in from that, land design did for us, and they did a fantastic job of not only placing buildings but showing them from different angles and showing them them activated. And they actually looked at different build out scenarios and programming of what could financially be feasible. If you go underground with the parking, that wouldn't count towards your FAR, but
now that's
the water table. I just got a geotech report. It's going to be tough.
What is, if you consider at 100, the cost of a 2-story parking structure, what is the cost of a 1-story underground? Do you have that number in mind?
So I would guess that a single story underground.
Well, above grade, what, $35,000 a spot or something like that?
You can do it for about 20. I mean, some.
Depends on how pretty it is.
Some you can do. Yeah, you're exactly correct.
If you go raw, $20,000 parking space above grade, below grade is probably.
I would say 18 to 30. I've heard as much as 50 grand a spot to go subterranean.
So it's more expensive,
especially yeah,
significantly. I've heard recently 50 grand is the number.
Yeah, and if you go two levels down, I mean you've got to have pumps.
Any of you go to Savannah?
Yeah,
that square that they restored, and they put like 5 or 6 stories of parking underground by the river.
I would feel very uncomfortable parking there.
No, it's fine, but I mean, I watched them do it. I watched them dig in the hole. I mean, it was mad. It was an expensive parking garage.
Yeah,
they did.
You can do anything with mine, I guess.
Yeah,
ventilated, exhaust.
Yeah, like I said, that do crazy exhaust.
It's, you know, waterproof. Yeah. It was amazing.
And it's the same thing with above grade parking on the ventilation.
Whole parking garage heated so you can walk.
We actually have, there's a presentation we have online of parking structures. We asked Bill Finfrock to come give a presentation because they kind of, had the market for a while on parking garages until they realized they can do.
Now they're building buildings.
Now they're doing building combined with parking garages, but they can do a parking garage significantly cheaper because they can build them, you know, pour the whole thing offside and one day a patch of dirt and next day, you know, a
what parking did the Rollins garage on Aloma come out per spot? Do you have that number?
I don't.
It's a fairly good-looking structure.
It's a precast.
It was precast. Yeah, it's precast.
Both of them are probably on the lower end, I bet.
I would say.
Right, they did treat it nicely on the.
Yeah, it looked terrible going up, and when they got through it.
Yeah, it painted it.
Pretty okay. Well, some of the trees will grow in.
Put some gingerbread.
Even the one they put on lime.
Well, the SunTrust garage is a very, very nice, pretty garage where you don't walk in next to it. You don't feel dominated by it. They did a very good job with that. And, but the one that was built at Rollins, the numbers are going to be a little skewed because the contractor, as a gift to the university, did not charge contractor fees or anything like that. So
so it's 20 or 30%.
Yeah. So that's gonna skew the numbers a little bit there. But
can I ask a quick question? I didn't get all the way through, but I just started reading because I've read these a couple of times as they've been going. Conditional uses on page 6 of I guess the land use part has the bit about vehicle sales showrooms, the language from McLaren, basically. Where did that come from? McLaren, obviously.
They were asked, the commission asked us to place that in there.
But it would be a similar condition where, because at one point it says no vehicle sales or something like that as an exclusion.
The comp plan and zoning code were extremely specific that no vehicles, it's the reason that the hauler RVs are no longer there and everything else, that everything had to be on the north side of town.
That somebody might want to build an indoor car dealership on Orange Avenue in addition to the, I assume they're still doing that. Nobody's touched that building.
Yeah, they are. It was quiet for a while and
is it permitting now?
I think they're starting to have those conversations.
I'm just curious why that was in here. It's an interesting one.
I'd hate to see it, quite honestly. I think it would, even if it was on the, you know, the larger J property, I don't.
Would the moped, isn't there a moped shop? Is that still there?
The Vespa
shop?
Grandfather.
I guess that would be considered.
Is it a quote vehicle?
I guess
that's the question you get
into. Okay,
what is a specialty transportation?
It says it showroom and it has to be inside.
We actually have
repair service inside.
We have a list of prohibited uses, and the
would not do that inside.
The moped shop would not be allowed.
Yeah.
So we have the prohibited uses where it would cover. But we also say that everything is grandfathered in and you can remodel your, you just can't expand your square footage or anything like that. But we don't want to penalize the.
Where did the 10,000 square foot threshold come from? Just a number.
Through discussion, kind of.
Once some of the, in the art kind of area, aren't there some areas that are more than 10,000 square foot? So if they were to turn over a use, technically, if it went from one studio to a theater or whatever, changed occupancy, would they have to get a CUP?
Depending on what the
warehouse?
It's only for a new building.
It has to be built, constructed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was wondering if that's the right number. Because 10,000 square foot's like.
But you got to have the parking. And that's the rub where you're going to have somebody regionally you can lease from.
Like if you have an acre, you can get 10,000 square foot single story and park at 5,000 and do underground retention, and the land values here allow that.
Mm-hmm.
So like I don't know if that
and our code should, actually promotes that exactly.
Yeah. I don't know if you could if someone should have to get the CUP, assuming that they're a use that we like. That was kind of one of my questions, just because it's 10,007 square feet. Or whatever the number is, you know, 11,500. Is that?
I think the
Is that normal? That's
just, been our threshold citywide.
Okay. So that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, I mean, if that's how we're treating it across the board, I was just making sure.
And for some of them, we looked at if it's what you would call kind of a parking hog that then is going to have a parking lot that sits empty. You know, we don't want to look at parking lots. We don't want to have more curb cuts and more blind kind of parking lots coming out of the back. We hope that people will.
Is there a building placement section? I haven't gotten all the way through the code, but is there a building placement requirement? Like some places
build two zones.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty typical. Yeah.
And
I should address.
And then we have a step back requirement for based on building height. And
is there a percentage of build two zone coverage that's required within the code? So that not only are you within the build two line, but you have to cover X percent of your build two line. Because that's how you kind of achieve your screening of the parking.
No, I think on that one we have in a different section. I think we just have something that won't allow, unless you know any access to orange, unless there is no other way to for you to access. Trying to push a lot of the access
to the rear and frame the
palmetto, and then get more people to park, to walk, because and activate the area, because you know there's a good amount of people who live in the area who would like to go to Real Fish, but they would be terrified to walk there. I mean, we went to the Mead Garden condominiums and spoke to the folks there, and they said, I'd love to walk there, but there's no way I'm going to, the time progress point was there. They're like, we don't want to walk past that haunted house and there's no lighting. And they're exactly correct. So the infrastructure portion, which will be borne by the 60%
build to line coverage. If you wanted to put a number in there, I'm just saying, just throwing it out there just so you get a higher percentage of building to frontage, assuming that they're not having existing, you know, access, ingress, egress. That's a good way to make sure you're screening your parking if someone's going to put the parking in the back.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's a good thought. It's a very good thought.
What's your landscaping for, like, in terms of like knee walls and stuff like that? Is that a requirement? Do you buffer your parking areas, your park issues?
In this case, an assessment placed, because when we upgraded the aesthetics of Orange Avenue years ago by putting the planters and that sort of thing, there was an assessment, a third paid by the city, a third paid by the CRA, and a third paid by the businesses. It's not fully paid out yet. So in this case, it would be pretty unique because it's got some characteristics. We want it to have some characteristics of a CBD, but it's going to carry a lot of too many cars for it to be a true CBD, but we can still make it a lot safer and carry the same number of cars, just slow them down severely because people like to speed on Orange Avenue on both sides. And pedestrian safety, we're not putting bikes on Orange Ave. If we look at three laning, bikes are not going to happen on Orange Avenue. Instead, the idea I have is to,
I think Orange County is still number one, the most unsafe place to bike.
Yeah, the Orlando Metro. Yeah,
I think we're
number one. Not something we want to be number
one. Yeah, I'd want to be number two on or three, and then move off the list.
The guy who's an avid cyclist that worked at FDOT and just really loved the bike lane thing that's like right next to the street. And I blame him.
There's so many different ways to look at it, but mine is, it's dangerous for cars. So dangerous for cars. There's no way I want bike lanes on there. People are afraid to use the parallel parking. And so instead, what we want to do is have a center turn lane. We really need to, you know, we haven't even done a high level conceptual of.
Yeah. I was going to say, like,
the $16 million cost. That is so out of scale of what the cost would actually be, because the roundabout concept we have, the great thing about a roundabout is you're taking out a lot of the traffic signals and that sort of thing, but you need real estate. And then you've got a lot of curbing, and you can't have two lanes that have to stop and all of a sudden get down into one lane, which is essentially what you have to do right now, because we don't have dedicated lefts at that light. If one person wants to turn left, you get one person through each of the signal cycles.
Yeah, and I always get yelled at for going in that lane.
Get in the right lane, decided to turn left down.
Well, and it pushes people into that right lane, and then we get a lot of traction. You always need to
you drive next time.
So, if we skinnied that down, instead of the area where a bike lane could be considered, instead I want to have a safety zone, just a striped safety zone that allows people to safely get in and out of their vehicles. It kind of extends that. It also allows people, if you have wider lanes, it'll allow people to parallel park without, you know, blocking all traffic. And and we know that the roundabout will work. We've modeled it, studied it. And
I got them all over Hilton where they used to. I haven't been there.
There's going
to
be one down at Clay, and DOT is. We talked to them the other day, and we told them things we've considered, and they were so excited because they were going, well, that's what we're doing. Where can we get to tell everybody you guys are looking at that? And I said,
I have a question about the enhancement thing, but yeah, I think you've scheduled like for Mary. Four work sessions or something. Like, what's the best way for us to make it through this document in an agenda format that hits on kind of the things that we need to be thinking about that makes this useful?
Good question. What I've done before there's been a lot of drafts that have come out, and they've been constantly changing. But
this is I met
individually with all the PNZ members a number of times, and we went through each of their individual questions and their suggested changes, and we kind of put those all into a document to be able to send out, so that by the time we got to a meeting, it can be a meaningful meeting.
Right, but it seems like the next workshop or two, like
we could probably go through these sections at least.
Hitting on each, you know, major section and kind of what they mean and kind of.
I can tell you the major.
One thing I was going to ask you: do we have to approve both documents at the same time? Can we get the comp plan piece kind of getting off to Tallahassee and wandering around while we wrestle with zoning, or is that
unsafe? I would say but I would not suggest adopting a comp plan at the end when the commission is looking at adopting, you know, the second reading of the ordinance approving the comp plan. I would highly recommend against adopting that comp plan without the zoning code portion to support it.
They kind of need to go together, right?
But
that's what I'm.
But while it's in Tallahassee, you've got 60 days of sit around and wait. And then while this is out for citywide notice, you've got 45 days, because it takes us 3 weeks in order to put the. Yeah. Put the thing together, then we have to
out next week,
which we are sending out next week to 17,000 households. And
because I was looking at it and I saw the chunks of, okay, we have the comp plan piece, then we sort of have about 20 pages of zoning that's broad zoning, and then we go into sub area by sub area by sub area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I kind of said, oh, okay, there's, and
if the comp plan goes off and then and we kind of make sure that the broad zoning kind of still lines up, then we got some time to say, okay, back to sub area B.
Yep.
For some reason Melissa doesn't like, you know, and we,
well, that's why I thought it might be helpful just to hit broad terms of this document.
Right.
It's meeting or two.
So which
we've got to do our own homework. Yeah.
Well, everybody needs to, home to go through it.
Right. Yeah. What you'll need to concentrate on is the most important thing in the comp plan is going to be the floor area ratios.
Yes.
The maximum standards, height. You know, I can tell you that in the first, when people were after 9 months of public meetings and citywide notice, it was kind of people goes, well, we never heard of this. And then it was last minute kind of blew up. Social media is lots of fun in planning these days, but a lot of misinformation and it just kind of, you know, the,
well, that's why I kind of, again,
toothpaste right. back in the tube.
The comp plan has these
yep.
broad chunks. Then the zoning first 20 pages or so says
there's
going to be some more spread
yeah.
here.
And there's going to be some ideas that will come out of this discussion that we will go, that's very, very good. We can add that in there.
I've seen it done where we'll do just uses and we can go through because there'll be questions on uses.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can do streets and blocks. Then you can do something like, you know, setbacks, that kind of related stuff, lot requirements, that kind of stuff. And then parking. We could do something. I don't know exactly how the sections are broken out, but if we could have it like.
Well, they're in there.
They're all in there.
You know, the thing that I get concerned about, and I've seen it from the reading, and in some of the cut and pasting, there's sort of like a chunk that you go, what the heck is this? And how did it get in the middle of this conversation? Doesn't that belong over here? If we get it, if we essentially start over from the writing, the concern is when we, I've got an idea. Yeah, but where did you put it?
Right.
But at least here it's there, and we can go through and say,
mm-hmm.
okay, this is a great idea, but for some reason, just we all agree it's in the wrong place. We can easily see the words move. And then we can keep these checklists. Did we cover parking? Did we cover
right.
something else over here? Did we cover, you know, like the block plan kind of jumps in there, and I must have read it about four times and said, this is great. I'm not completely sure I know what I'm reading yet. So there's one that I would say, okay, I need to help with the block plan.
Right.
You know, but I fear if we get too far off or we started, okay, we're starting over here. How are we going to solve parking and along? It's in here. It's
yeah.
just all over the place, but we got to kind of live with, I think, I'm just proposing this, what we've got just to keep track
mm-hmm.
or we're going to lose the bubble on this is a hell of an idea, but I can't remember
where it was. Get your red or your blue pen.
Well, there's a lot of that.
We've written 50 plus drafts
sure.
of this where
sure.
it's changed. Things have been added. Things have been taken out. Things have been added to, it's probably not the right place for this. And you start to, trying to kind of say we need to group this stuff together because it's, you know, it's kind of all over the place, and because someday a developer is going to have to read this
yeah.
and make sense of it
yeah.
and
I think that's why I would, while I go through my own the next one or two work sessions, we're going to have to start. You guys know it better than anybody at this point, like what's the structure and what's the important parts of each of these sections that you think we should be?
I can tell you exactly what the big,
agenda where we get through, you know, half of it in
yeah.
one work session and the other half, and then we in the interim do our own
mm-hmm.
red line.
Yeah, and then
probably does that make sense?
And come meet with us.
Yeah, I think we got
individually as well.
in chunks.
Take chunks of it.
Yeah, and I've seen them. A lot of ones are organized, whether the code is or not, because of historical ways you format your other codes. A lot of them go big to little, you know, like blocks and streets, big macro.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to open space, which is somewhat macro, but that affects parks. Then you go down to lots and blocks, looking at single stuff. Then you get down to uses and parking. It's like those four sections.
Yeah.
They can be broken up a million ways and it's still functional, but we have kind of a big picture item to go through at each one and make sure we check all those boxes, kind of understand it.
Yeah.
And obviously you're super busy, so that's a lot of work to.
Oh, I've done nothing but
reduce that all down
the last 2.5 years.
Down to some simple bullets, yeah. But I think that'd be really helpful for us to just, you know, get through, cover our comments in each section.
Oh, we won't be faced by any additional work. We've got a combined, I don't know, 8,000 hours into this. So
we feel like that. Well, I just want us to be able to provide some meaningful input.
Format.
I mean, just the comp plan. It's just 7 pages.
That's digestible. Yeah.
You know, you almost say, why can't we at the next work session agree, okay, we kind of like this, we don't like this.
Well, that's the important one because it's got the sub areas and the FAR.
Well, those are broken out in more detail, right. But if we can agree to this, isn't that kind of moving us?
Yeah,
because well, this will FAR be the chunk.
Huge.
Yeah,
is this the piece on September 7th that we're going to present?
We will have the opportunity to discuss both, but there is no requirement that you take action on the
zoning
portion. If but you want to
continue that. We got to okay this in 2 months. 7 pages.
Sounds doable.
And there's
maybe eight when David
gets and there's back. A lot of there's actually a lot of policies in there that DEO I will have to explain to them. They'll say, why is this in here? This has nothing to do with the comp plan. And I'll just say, because my commission wants it, so just deal with it.
You know? You're right. Yes, you try to tackle that. And then this document's a little more onerous, and then it's got
but you can
but don't make your decision on the comp plan on the first meeting.
So there's some sub area pieces and like you said, some water areas.
There's kind of like the what applies to all and then what's specific
right.
to each. And we got to kind of be able to
get
to the big and all, which some is the comp plan, some's code. You know, some of the stuff is applicable across and just piecing through those, the comp plan and the big ticket items that cover everybody, I think it'd be good. And then zooming way in.
Yeah. And after a couple of meaningful opportunities for discussion on the big ticket items, that's what's going to be in the comp plan. That's going to help you make your decision on what you all feel is appropriate development levels that are in the comp plan. There's some policies in there that you may say, why, okay, I don't agree with this, or I could care less, or, you know, I totally agree with this, and that's fine. But
how'd you come up with these numbers? The enhancement maybe.
I don't know.
FAR percentages.
I don't even know what version that is.
I mean,
but, yeah.
Version with the multipliers in it.
Was this a comparison to what some other people
this
are doing
is
in other
started
cities?
Is something very unique and has been continued to be very unique at every step. We've been
increases. I'm just curious.
The multipliers is we've been working with.
Think you're on par.
We've been working with the commission and with the mayor on those and trying to find an equitable way for that to work.
I've been asked personally to focus on that section specifically. So I think having
we
a
will take
of time
any
in a work session to look at it would be helpful.
And I see a lot of it struck through. There's still some comments due from, I don't forget what the colors mean. Is it still a work in progress or?
We're getting new input every day.
It just says that these edits are reviewed.
You should have a live feed.
There's a bunch that are struck. I mean, it's way different than the first version.
The one.
I'm just now getting on board.
So I think a lot of that comes from the mayor. The commission has kind of said, we've wrestled with this for a year and a half, and we don't feel like we're any closer than we were. So they've entrusted the mayor, who has a development and financial acumen background, and said,
we got a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I was trying to understand that, how that relates to here and connect.
Yeah, I was having a hard time with that spreadsheet trying to say exactly looking at.
Basically, it's land values.
Yeah.
And how much the values mean for added intensity. So added building square footage.
Okay, yeah. That's...
And so then that comes into play with the equation that comes.
Does this incentivize?
So before that, those tables is where the equation comes into play, where that table has the value in the equation.
Yes.
Don't put it on all of it.
No. Fully welcome input on this.
Get the trigonometry going.
We've written and rewritten that section more times than I can remember.
Scorecard kind of concept can work. It can also.
The unique thing about a development enhancement menu, which a lot of cities really liked what we did, DEO loved what was in the first version, but it's usually rewarding density.
Yeah.
Which we do not do here. I mean, just to put it bluntly, we kind of, it's a dirty word here. And so a lot of other cities will give you a percentage of increase in building size depending on the number of additional units you can add. And so ours was, it made it very difficult when we got rid of density transfer, because office buildings, especially right now with everyone wondering what's going to happen with all the office space out there now that everyone's working from home, it's not going to pay for parking. Is not going to pay for parking.
Residential or hotel.
Yep.
Until a restaurant.
Yeah. And it's got to be a good restaurant.
Yeah.
Denny's everyone has been asking for is not gonna hold it.
Man, you'd be surprised what these cookie shops and donut places make.
Hey, we're getting a chicken guy.
So
chicken. Because we're good. We don't need this thing.
There is
Popeyes right
around the street. There are so many.
You guys have a spicy chicken sandwich? You
yes.
don't need an overload.
Oh yeah. That
the
we're calling that
sandwich happens no matter what.
We're calling that Poultry Parkway, because there are so many chicken places in that one little stretch.
Yes, that's right. Never even eaten it before at Disney. I was surprised.
But yeah, it's there. That's the part of this that has been the toughest nut to crack. Because when each time a modification is made to size, to FAR, to parking, to anything else, it greatly impacts the enhancement menu. And a lot of times it nullifies its ability to be effective.
Yep.
And it's,
what's the current reasoning, I guess, for having just to provide some additional incentives for
still trying to get where we wanted to go with
the bookends
and then being able to provide to
you're not
help
allowing
the area
more
the parking.
Stories, you're just allowing a little more.
Yeah, and I've looked at ways we could.
I'm not even sure
get creative.
What couple ways you can do.
To me, there's always been there's been offsets for traffic impact. So that would typically be an improvement to the infrastructure for transportation. Density bonuses that I've seen mostly are open space related. So they're dedicating actual land. So that open space, then they get a transfer or they get a density bonus there.
Which we're requiring 25% of their land.
Open space.
Meaningful open space.
But not dedicated.
Meaningful.
Dedicated to the city as a
dedicated. Open to the public.
Well, I guess I've seen that open space or the density bonuses require that it be dedicated to public in perpetuity. And then aside from that, everything else is just an impact fee credit. I haven't seen a whole lot of
activated open space that has to be available for the general public increase. Because
well, we don't have impact fees yet.
Right?
Wait, the city doesn't have impact fees.
Water and sewer parks. We have
Orange County doesn't collect a trap. Well, they'd have to.
They collect their own.
They collect their own on developments in your jurisdiction. No. So we wouldn't have
it. Not in our jurisdiction.
They don't pay. Nobody pays any transportation impact fees.
Not yet. Park. That's why I went. I need money for transportation. So.
Wow. Because you go do something in the city of Orlando, they'll sock it to you.
So yeah, what we're doing is really a no net. Loss or gain because our building fees are high and you can't transfer building fees to the general fund or anything like that. They have to be used for basically promoting the Florida building code. But if we have to reduce fees and in exchange create a transportation impact fee, it's
when is that going to get adopted? Is that
I've been working on that. For so
will
a while.
It be done by the time we open the floodgate?
Yes, by the time everything.
Yeah, that's like priority numero uno.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know that was not going on.
Mm-hmm. So we have
millions of dollars that have gone. Anyways,
yeah, we have to have
well gone forever.
It was looking. Wow. At first, it was going to be looking at. For just this area, and I said it's going to take the same amount of time to do just for this area than it is for the whole city. So it's
referenced in here about the fees.
Yeah,
it is. We wanted to make
when they wanna, come down.
Well, I will say impact fees are usually put onto developers, so they're usually not as contentious as like an increase in taxes. So yep. Where's that?
And especially when there's a reduction in building permit fees that goes along with it, and it's a known net loss or gain.
You do have to provide enough to make the performance work.
Yeah, we have to do the dual rational nexus test, and we are there's some of that we're going to use our transportation engineering consulting firm to do some of that because there's to do it citywide. There's 50 different ways to do it. Some give credits, some are give door credits and then rebates, some break it down. Like Pinellas County has 30 different districts to where the money from each district has to be spent in that district. We're such a small geographical area that we're saying we're one area. We don't want to break it down. And we want to make the mathematical equation as simple as possible because if you've seen a lot of transportation impact fees, they are... you get into some major algebra there, but ours is that we want to really just look at net new trips, net new impact, because a lot of them tie it to new development of residential units. We're not building any residential units. A lot of people talk about the overgrowth that's happening and all the new people in Winter Park. We grew less than 0.1% the year before last, where our neighbors to the north grew 13%, and the county to the north of them was about 18%, and it's like we added like 5 people, so we shouldn't base it on new residential units because we're not going to collect a lot of impact fees there, so. And it'll be commercial is where we'll connect.
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
We want to
ding 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 ding.
Call
Thanks,
it.
Mary, for getting us food.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Did we solve it all?
Yeah. We're adjourned.
We're adjourned.
All right.